One of the great voices in rock history, pop history, whatever kind of history you want, Paul Zeiss. Yours from yesterday, of course, but also Linda Ronstadt. You agree?
Agree. Absolutely agree. It's amazing how many people, you know, I'm used to like being on at night, you know, in crazy hours where nobody's listening.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many people heard me singing Hearts on Fire yesterday.
I got a lot of feedback. You got
to
get used to that. And you should sing more. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I'm just saying it. That was funny.
And fun. City Limits is to my left. Paul Zeiss sitting in Ron Cook's old chair. Here today, I have a severe case of pre-vacation elation. I'm going to Florida at a 5:50 a.m. flight. My wife and my daughter are coming with me. I'm going to play golf. They're going to go to the beach. I'm going to go to the beach, and then I'm going to play more golf for the next 5 days, which means you're doing the show by yourself, which you just found out about.
Do you do you have all your golf rounds set up, tee time set up, and everything else?
Yes, but I just discovered, here's the question. I just discovered a few of the courses are like 40 miles away from our hotel.
Wow.
Do I rent a car or do I spend my entire paycheck on Ubers? Which would you do?
Rent. I'd rent a car. Yeah. Where are you flying into?
Fort Myers. We're going to see Ron on Friday night.
There you go.
I'll buy him some free and some free light.
Free and free light. So, I would say that you probably, if you do the math, probably should rent a car.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
I hate the hassle of it, though.
Yeah. Where is Fort Myers? Is that where? So you'll fly. You fly right into Fort Myers, or do you fly into like Tampa or something?
Fort Myers, and then go over to Marco Island. Might go to a Pirate game. We're 2 hours away from Miami.
Yeah. Why not? Go to the opener. Go to the Saturday game.
I want to work it around Bailey Falter's first start.
Yes.
To make that pilgrimage.
Yeah. Maybe Mark Gardo will give you some tickets.
Maybe he will. That would be gigantic. How are you doing today, City Limits?
I'm
everything well?
Great. Yeah, everything is well.
Glad to hear that. Yesterday was unbelievable. We had a good time and also raised money for a great cause, the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. The last I checked from our friend Brian Gulish, he tweeted last night, it was something like 300,000 meals provided. And I think the important thing to know is that today's another day. Texts need to 50155. You know, yesterday was a big, huge event, but that doesn't take away the need today. It's like, you know, the day after a wedding or something where, okay, life still goes on here today. So stay involved is what I would say. And you said your basketball team last night took up a challenge to raise more money. What happened?
Yeah, so we had someone who wanted to be anonymous, who basically said he's going to donate money, and he would like us to make it, would like it to be from our team, and he would like our team to, you know, me to come up with a way for them to earn the money, so to speak. So we had shooting challenges, and I assigned $3 donation per three-pointer made, a $2 donation per two-pointer made. Right. And then a $50 donation from the volleyball line and a $100 donation from the half court line.
How many half court shots went
three.
In?
Three.
Nice.
Yes. So we made we ended up raising $1,200.
Beautiful.
And of course, the girls were really happy. And I think the most important thing about it, Joe, it gave me an opportunity to talk to them about why it's so important to do things like that.
Yeah.
You know, like. For the most part, the players on our team, you know, they're from families that are, you know, okay or whatever. You know what I'm saying? You know, they don't have to worry about food insecurity, so to speak. So it's important to sort of instill that when they're young. Like, hey, you know what? Not everybody has it like you. And so it was good. It was a really good opportunity for me to be able to talk to them about that. And then they were really excited and, you know, in fact, the girls were like, boy, that's a lot of pressure. We need to make these shots to make sure we raise money. You know what I'm saying? I said, well, that's part of it, too. I mean, we got to get better at making shots.
That's great, man. And kudos to whoever was behind that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was. He wants to be anonymous, so I'll keep him anonymous. By the way,
Yeah.
I just looked this up for you. It looks like you can get, it looks like between $250 and $300 if you rented a car for the entire week.
What kind of car for $250 or $300?
Fort Myers.
With wheels?
In Fort Myers. In Fort Myers. Let's see. Compact car, Nissan Versa.
Beautiful.
Something like that.
Am I supposed to get insurance on rental cars, or is that a ripoff? Is that a good idea or a bad idea to get the daily insurance per day? I never know.
Well, it depends. I mean, what you need to do is check with your personal car insurance if rental cars are covered, because some of them do. If not, if you go on one of these travel sites, and here's the thing, if you go on one of these travel sites, they offer you insurance that's a lot cheaper.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to drive.
You know what I mean?
Like
if you reserve your car on one of these travel sites, like Orbitz or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You can get your insurance. Like I was in Florida a few weeks ago to visit my parents. The insurance at the rental car place was like $18 a day. The insurance through Orbitz was like $9 a day.
Did you see Ron on that trip?
No, I was on the other coast.
So,
I was on the Atlantic.
You could have made the gesture. Ron's waiting for somebody to visit him down there. I think he's lonely.
I don't think he wants to see anybody but you.
Yeah, that might be true.
And Joe Namath.
Well, Joe Namath isn't far from him. Based on our experience last week down at the casino when we did a show during the NCAA tournament, I have a feeling that Paul would not turn down a six-pack right now, city limits. So why don't we crack one for him? And for Ron, a toast to our old friend Ron. It's a Wednesday morning six-pack. You ready, Paul?
Yep, go ahead.
Topic number one today, Cordarrelle Patterson and the new kickoff rule. Paul, I like Cordarrelle Patterson. I loved him a couple of years ago. But, you know, I keep hearing people are going crazy over this, over his resume. I mean, Mel Gray was a great kick returner, too, but he hasn't been in the league for 15 years. Are you excited about this?
Well, my problem is that teams have figured out, and they'll figure it out with this new kickoff, they've figured out how to sort of make the kick returner almost obsolete, basically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They find ways to kick. And so if this guy... First of all, he's old.
He's 33. He's been in the league almost since the station came into existence.
So let's start there. But secondly, if for instance, he starts to go off early in the season, they're going to find ways to kick it around him.
Here's the way to kick it around him. Hold on a second. Give me another six-pack, because this is technically another topic. Plus, we save one. What am I missing with the new kickoff rule? If you kick it out of the end zone, the other team gets it at the 30.
Right.
So why won't teams still kick it all out of the end zone every single time? What am I missing?
Especially if you have the choice between kicking it short and having a guy like this maybe run it back to the 35 or 36.
Right.
You know, and the reality is, if you look at the way the kickoffs are designed, they're going to get to the 20. No matter what.
No matter what.
If you kick it to them, they're going to get to the 20. So probably 22, 23, 24 is where the average, you know what I mean? Well, you're talking about 5 yards and not having the danger of a guy running it back.
We've spent the last 10 years watching every kicker kick it out of the end zone. I don't know why that wouldn't continue. they keep saying this is the XFL kickoff. No, it's not. The XFL kickoff, if you kick it out of the end zone, goes to the 35. To me, that's a bit. Now we're talking 10 yards more
right
than what we've been watching for 10 years. I think they screwed this up by only making it that by a the one thing they changed from the XFL is instead of the 35, you get it at the 30. So tell me what I'm missing. Right. What am I missing, limits?
I don't think there really is anything.
Why wouldn't you kick it out of bounds or kick it out of the end zone every single time like you already are?
Especially with how just different the format is in terms of how you're returning kicks and everything. It just seems so gimmicky.
Well, the thing to me is, if you really wanted to make this something where if teams, you know, have to think about kicking it to the returner, I'd go even further, Joe. If you kick it out of the end zone, you get it at the 40.
Now you would have incentive to return it every time.
Now it would
I would have bumped it by 5 yards. You're right.
Make it 40. Make it to 40 because then now you got to know it really. Now you have to kick it, and you have to kick it to, you know, the returner and try and make a stop. But at the 30, I don't think that that's all that punitive, honestly.
Paul Alexander has weighed in that the credit card you use usually covers the insurance. So thank you to Paul for weighing in. That's actually very helpful.
Yeah, you got to figure that out, yeah.
Now, Cordero, he is 33. And if you look at some of his numbers, and I know a lot goes into numbers, he only averaged 3.5 yards per carry last year. I know he's not playing running back here, but I'm just looking. That was down from 4.8, 4, 6.1 one year. He became more of a running back type in Atlanta under Arthur Smith. But that average plummeted. He has one kick return for a touchdown in the last 3 years, and his kick return average has plummeted. He came into the league. How old are you, Limits? When were you born?
2001.
He came into the league when you were 12. Imagine City Limits back there with a binky, Paul.
Yeah.
Doing the show a little bassinet.
At 12.
He was 12 years old. I think one of the things that's always incredible to me, honestly, is when they basically change a role and they make it worse. I don't think this makes it better, do you?
No, I agree 100%. Like, they either didn't change it at all or made it worse. Now, will there be more kickoffs returned? I guess only 22% of them were returned last year. But I don't think this is going to have the transformative effect. Whoever added in this, and it was a last-minute change, that touchbacks out of the end zone instead of going to the 35 will only go to the 30, just ruined everything. They ruined it. And I agree with you. It should be bumped up 5. If you're going to have this radical, revolutionary change to kickoffs and really try to ramp up the excitement here, then make them return the kick. Or make the kicking team kick it inbounds, you know?
Yeah.
With the penalty being the other team gets it at their 40. Now we're talking. This is nothing. I think it's going to add up to nothing. And this Cordero Patterson, the excitement in some quarters yesterday over this guy. And again, he's been an awesome player, an awesome weapon. He's almost as old as Ron.
So here's the other thing that this does. Do you remember the Steelers versus Dallas Super Bowl with Bill Cowher?
Yeah, the onside kick, right?
That particular onside kick could not happen with these because you have to declare you're going to have an onside kick.
Let's declare the onside kick.
And the record. What is the City Limits, I'm asking him to look this up. What is the percentage of onside kick recovery when the other team knows you're going to onside kick?
Almost zero. Let me jump in there.
It's like 2% or something, 1%.
Now have to announce your surprise attacks.
Yes.
Well, the success rate last year was 3.2%.
Right, and that included all of them, right?
Correct.
That included all of them.
On the other end of it, they won't adopt this 4th-and-20.
Right.
So what do we got here? We've actually reduced the excitement factor in the game.
And you've taken away the one weapon a team might have, which is the surprise onside kick. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do, and I don't like it. Off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. Got a lot happening on today's show. We're 3 deep into a 6-pack, starting with the next topic. We have the big boy, Mark Cabali. We have Starkey's Card of the Week with General Patton. We have Jeff Hathorn, who's at Pitt Spring practice today and can weigh in on all kinds of things. And we have John Parrotto on the Pirates, which should be quite interesting as we get ready for the Fighting Bailey Falters to open the season. And speaking of that, give me one here. What are we doing? What are we doing? How are we supposed to believe this is about winning when Paul Skeens is 5 hours down the road at Indianapolis and Bailey Falter is in your opening day rotation in a division, Paul, where everybody, A, thinks the division stinks, which means the winner is going to have probably in the mid-80s, which means every game is critical. If not Skeens, why not a free agent? You had Jordan Montgomery sign yesterday for $25 million. You had Sonny Gray, who won the Cy, or was second in the Cy Young in the AL last year, sign with the Cardinals for a very reasonable rate. 3 years, $25 million a year. You pony up $25 million, your payroll's still bottom 10.
Yeah.
You couldn't go out and get... We're starting the season with Bailey Falter in the rotation. Really?
Well... And then, of course, there's the elephant in the room, Trevor Bauer, who you could get for nothing.
Right.
It really is disappointing. I'll tell you what's really disappointing about it is, how could they have been so far off or so poor at developing or working with Ronzi Contreras?
He is a major. I thought he was going to be maybe your number two pitcher.
And he's a disaster.
Beyond a disaster. And the only reason he's here is because he's out of options.
Exactly. So they have to keep him around. And so they need to hope that they can get something out of him as a bullpen piece. But imagine if I'd have told you, you know, a year ago that Ronzi Contreras would be basically on the roster almost because, you know, they don't want to give him up. They don't want to lose him, and he has no options, and that's the only reason he's on the roster, and he's in the bullpen, and Bailey Falter is in the starting rotation.
Right, the name itself just speaks to the whole offseason approach to this rotation. And yeah, what about Contreras, and what have they done to Luis Ortiz? 2 years ago, I had Bob Walk on the air with us saying, I haven't seen a guy who opened my eyes like that making his Pirates debut since Gerrit Cole. And then last year, he comes out and he's throwing like Bailey Falter. What happened to him? And then they have Domingo Herman. They're willing to go out and take a dumpster dive on him. He's got more personal baggage than a fleet of UPS carriers. Limits. And I pulled that line out again. I used that on Barrasso a long time ago. He didn't like it.
No.
He came after me and challenged me to come on the ice and take shots on him.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought to myself, briefly, I thought to say, sure, I'll come out there, Tom, and I'll take one from half ice like Tom Fitzgerald did in the playoffs a few years ago, and then I thought better of it. What are we doing here? Why all these dumpster dives? Well, just go out and sign a real guy for once.
We're missing the big picture, though, Joe. And the big picture is, as we've talked about several times, this division is not going to take 95 wins to win.
No.
I think 87, 88 is probably going to be enough. And if you have 87 or 88, and you had, what, 75 last year, 76, you're not that far away.
Fangraphs has the Cubs or the Cardinals winning it with 83. 83. I was looking at a bunch of different sites and publications. Every other team in the NL Central is picked by somebody to win it. The Cardinals made some interesting moves, including Sonny Gray, for a very reasonable price. The Cubs probably have the best overall talent, if not the Reds, whose talent is a little younger. The Cardinals have some age creeping in. The Brewers always find a way, like the Rays. So even though they've been crushed here pitching-wise in the offseason, at least one person I saw pick them. Nobody is picking the Fighting Falters. Everybody is picking the Pirates to finish second last or last, mostly last.
Why not even Quinn Priester or Luis Ortiz? Like, Bailey Falter is not a guy that's going to be around a while or that you're willing to take a bet on like Quinn Priester.
It's just unbelievable. And the thing is, limits. The Pirates they're not boring at all.
Oh.
They could be pretty exciting. I kind of like their lineup. I'm very enticed by a left side of the infield with Key Brian Hayes and O'Neill Cruz. You know what you're getting from Reynolds. I actually like the addition of Michael A. Taylor because it gives you superior defense.
Yeah.
Sawinski's kind of an X factor. Davis is going to be interesting, if nothing else. Maybe a middle-of-the-order thumper type. Tellez is an entertainer. He might not be any – I don't know what's going to happen with him.
I like Triolo in second.
He's Vogelbach reincarnated.
The thing about Tellez, Rowdy Tellez, is that at PNC Park –
It could be fun.
If he gets 200 at-bats or 150, 200 at-bats at PNC Park, he's going to hit, 10, 15 home runs probably there. And then, you know, so I think he can hit 22, 23 home runs as a platoon player.
And he's fun to watch. So the lineup the lineup is, I think, going to be pretty entertaining. The bullpen has a chance to be absolutely lights out, but what good's a bullpen if you don't have a lead?
Well, the bullpen's got to get healthy, too, with Majinski and Holderman starting on the IL.
Thank you, Limits. Please crack one. Paul, we had Jake Ensel last night. We'll get to that in a moment. First, there's been a massive there are two overreactions in Pittsburgh sports here. One is to Cordero Patterson and the kickoff rule. The other is to the Penguins winning a game last night. Has anybody, and doing it in such a way that, oh, why haven't they played these young guys all along? Look at how much spark they added. Yeah, I guess I agree to a certain extent, but did Carolina look all that interested to you? And they still had about an 80 to 40 shots advantage in attempts. Carolina is doing what the Penguins did for so many years when we get to late March. They're doing enough to be representative in games. But there's an internal clock with hockey players, and they know this ain't the time. This is an exhibition fight. They have heavyweight fights coming up. Right. This was like going out there with a sparring partner. You both got the headgear on. Nothing's real. And if you think Carolina was laying it on the line last night, you're out of your mind. And if they were, they would beat the Penguins 1,000 times out of 1,000 in a 7-game series within 4 or 5 games. So let's not read too much into it. At least that's my take. What's yours?
I mean, the biggest thing is, you said it. I can't pronounce
that. Call him Needle.
Needle had 38 saves. And a lot of them were good saves. You know, like were tough, high danger type saves. So he played out of his mind. But, you know, give the Penguins credit. They played well. I agree with you, though. I mean, that's the tough thing about the end of this hockey season a lot of times. These games down the stretch, you know, it's hard to really gauge. The Penguins had a chance to do some damage to try and put themselves in position to try and get to the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they did, basically, was lose a bunch of games. You know, they're not supposed to lose and put themselves in a position where, you know, now we can have
Bailey Falter.
No. Now we can have these moral victories and you know, and I love every time the Penguins win a game, there's a certain crowd that comes out of the woodwork and says, you see, this is it.
Right. Last night, the twist on that was, you see the young guys like Jonathan Gruden, why weren't they here? Yeah. This would have all been different. It wouldn't have, and the cupboard is still probably close to bare.
And the other part of it is, you see, these guys, they've got pride. Don't count them out. They're going to come. They're coming. Okay. All I'm saying is, I don't get that giddy when a team is basically out of it.
It's silly season now. You can't believe anything you see. It's where the Pirates are every September. Don't believe what you're seeing.
Here's the other. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And here's the other thing that you got to love about this, Joe. They play their next two games. Theoretically, they should get 4 points, right? Because they play a home and home against Columbus, who's terrible.
Right.
You think they're going to get 4 points?
No.
I bet you they get 3. That's my prediction. They'll get 3 out of these two games that they absolutely need 4 points out of. But then after that, they go at New York, at New Jersey, at Washington.
Yeah, they could, even if they won the rest of their games, it might still be troublesome. Limits, crack, thank you. You're ahead of the game there. Do you have the Gensel quote from last night by any chance? Or can I just reference it? Either way.
I have a couple of Gensel quotes in general.
Hopefully the one where he's asked about coming back here in the summer. But first, Paul, what did you make of the Gensel tribute video? The Penguins do those things very well.
Yeah. I think the Penguins, their tribute videos, I mean, think about what they did for Jágr. And
a 10 out of 10.
You know what I'm saying? And yep. And every seemingly the, you know, the 41 times they've done it now for Fleury, you know, I think it's always tremendous.
Yeah, they perfected that one.
I thought it was tremendous. I think, you know, I mean, obviously he's a guy that everybody in that locker room, at least the guys that played with him, really, really like and respect and everything else. So you knew it was going to be good, and you knew the Penguins were going to do it right, and they did.
They always do. Now do we have Gensel asked about the possibility of returning here as a free agent this summer?
Yeah, he talked about potentially coming back and also that he didn't want to leave to begin with.
I don't know. We'll see how this year goes, and, you know, I really like it, Carolina.
I really like Carolina, he said. And then you have another clip, limits.
Yeah, he talked about that it was just not his intention at all to begin with to leave.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that, I mean, my intention was to stay, but they just thought there was a better direction to go a different way, and it's out of my hands, so it's not my choice.
I believe him, Paul. I think he wanted to stay, and as to the first part, this summer, he ain't signing back in Carolina. I said that when it first happened, because if you know about the Hurricanes, you know they don't sign big deals. They right. throw around big contracts like manhole covers. There was a lot of talk like, oh, he's going to sign right away. No, he's not. And he's not going to sign back there unless he's willing to take a steep discount. And it seems to me this whole thing is about him not being willing to take a steep discount.
Well,
he's going to free agency. There's a small chance, I guess, he could sign with the Penguins. It's possible. Do you think so?
I don't. I kind of feel like it's that ship has sailed. And I think part of it is because the Penguins are probably going to look at the cost of it and say, we have better way, you know, we have more pressing needs than we could spend that money on, you know, a couple of players as opposed to one.
Yeah, you're probably, I tend to agree. I still think there's a small chance that maybe Kyle Dubas is playing chess here. Maybe he loaned Jake Guentzel to Carolina and will work something out this offseason, especially if he could get rid of some of these other onerous contracts that he has. And that's a great word, limits. Please crack one more. That's okay. Reach into the salad drawer. I saved one in there for Paul. It's a tall boy. 16 ounces. Do you have it yet, limits?
The system is giving me trouble loading.
Do you know how to imitate a beer being cracked open? Just do anything with your voice. There you go. Thank you. Paul, this morning I wrote about Jeff Capel going on the air here yesterday and saying he's so sickened by not being in the tournament that he's not even watching it. And then I'm sickened by it too. Not necessarily that Pitt's not in it, but that Virginia was, and that the ACC and the Big East, which have a combined record of something like, 20-0?
Yeah.
18-1? I don't know what it is. They have a great record so far. Those two conferences were disrespected. And I can't get over the fact that Virginia got in. So I didn't want to just let it go. I wrote about it today, about what a horse crap decision that was to put them in. And about the fact, here's the crux of it for me. The crux of it for me is that they put as much emphasis on the exhibition season in November and early December as they do in the heat of the season in February and early March. And there's no way those two things should equal each other out. As Capel pointed out, I have a new team every year. A lot of teams do because of the transfer portal.
Right.
You can't judge teams in November. You just can't, because it's not really your team. You don't know what you have yet. Why not emphasize late season play? Why not?
Well, again, the Mike DeCourcy's of the world will tell you, well, it's because there's no correlation between winning at the end of the season and that carrying over into the tournament. But that to me is a really, really, really flimsy defense.
Look at NC State.
Well, it's not even about that. It's about teams that are playing well in the last 10, 12, 15 games of the season. They're playing against in conference, number one, so they're playing better teams than, for the most part, they're playing in November.
Yeah.
And like you said, they're completely different teams. They are completely different teams. Pitt was a completely different team in February than they were in November. And that's mostly because their two best players were true freshmen who needed to learn how to play, needed to figure out the college game. And it's absolutely silly to me. I don't think Virginia is the most egregious, to be honest. Utah State, I get it. They won the Mountain West Conference, okay? And this is to your point, Joe, okay? Let's go to Utah State real quick. And we've talked about TCU a bunch of times. I mean, that was a fraud as well. But let's go to the Mountain West regular season champs. Didn't win the tournament, so they weren't the automatic, they weren't the automatic qualifier. They didn't win the tournament. Here is their non-conference schedule, Joe.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yep.
South Dakota College of the Mines.
What?
South Dakota College of the Mines.
Like people who work in mines? Or
I
people
have no
who have
idea. I'm just reading this. Like
M-I-N-D-S or mines, M-I-N-E-S?
M-I-N-E-S.
All right.
Never heard of that.
You're really digging for something there. You like that horse?
Wait, yeah. Yeah, you like that? Yes. Hey, so Bradley, presumably without the guy that killed Pitt 15 years ago. Remember, what was that guy's name?
Oh, what was that guy's name? The big center.
Yeah, the big center.
I can't remember.
It was like Mick something or McDermott or Mick.
Yeah,
something.
He went early in the draft. It was a total bust. Something.
Right, that guy. Right? So, South Dakota College of the Mines, Bradley, Southern Utah, Marshall, who just fired their coach, Akron, Stephen F. Austin, St. Louis, Cal Irvine, San Diego, Northwest College of the Nazarene.
Mm. I wonder if they ever played the Mines School.
Santa Clara, San Francisco, and East Tennessee State. Now explain to me why Utah State got into the tournament.
Well, would you take away the automatic bid for winning your conference tournament? Didn't they win it?
No, they won the regular season, but they didn't.
Oh, just the regular season.
Yes, that's my point. They weren't an automatic. They weren't an automatic qualifier.
No, then I hear you.
My point is, but they got propped up because they're in the Mountain West, because all these metrics.
When did the Mountain West get? And Capel talked about that. How the Mountain West has figured something out with the metrics.
They have to because they got six teams in. And I'm looking at their six teams resume. If you look at what the Mountain West did as a conference, out of conference.
Yeah.
I mean, San Diego State had a few wins. I think that's about the only legitimate, you know what I mean? Nevada, I guess if you want to count, Nevada beat TCU. But again.
If you were going to choose another team from the ACC, if that was like, hey, we got to choose a fifth, it clearly should have been Pitt.
Absolutely.
Pitt and St. John's both look like really good teams that would still be playing right now. We can talk about this more, Paul. 412.
Well, Pitt, St. John's, I mean, Seton Hall.
Seton Hall.
There was a number of teams. I looked at Virginia, Utah State, and TCU as three of the most fraudulent teams
yeah.
in the whole entire field.